Welcome to Diagram Dialogues, a podcast that explores the forces transforming healthcare across Asia-Pacific and the ways in which diagnostics is shaping this future. These episodes will feature leading voices, from innovators and changemakers to patient advocates who are dreaming of a better tomorrow and making it a reality. Hear how they are innovating diagnostics, shaping healthcare, and changing lives. Welcome back to Diagram Dialogues. I'm your host, Jonathan Chan. In this episode, we want to highlight a discussion focusing on the future of diagnostics. How can diagnostic tools transform healthcare, and how can innovation help us overcome challenges in access? We hope you will find this conversation insightful.
Hello and welcome. My name is Vivian Parry. I'm a science writer and broadcaster, and today we're going to be talking about the potential of diagnostics. We're at a pivotal moment in healthcare. COVID has placed intense strain on health systems, which were already buckling beneath ever-increasing demand. But at the same time, COVID has accelerated the switch to digital technologies. The need for change and the opportunities created by science are colliding, creating a unique moment of opportunity. Keeping people out of expensive hospital beds by diagnosing early when simpler preventive measures or treatments are still possible is critical for both patients and cash-strapped health systems the world over. And equally, a personalised medicine approach, ensuring the right medicine first time, will be a vital part of future healthcare. Diagnostics are key to both. But with me to discuss all this today are Duran Wanriga, President and CEO of the Canadian Organisation for Rare Disorders and President of the Asia-Pacific Alliance of Rare Disease Organisations. Duran is also the indefatigable coordinator of an international advisory council that will collaborate with Roche in the development of the guide through the diagnostic journey. And Thomas Schinecker, CEO of Roche Diagnostics since August 2019. He joined Roche in 2003. His background is in genetics and molecular biology. So, Thomas, let's start with you. Diagnostics play a crucial role in screening, diagnosis, and disease prevention. How important is early diagnosis, and how does it impact the overall patient experience?
Well, today we really live in very exciting times. I mean, if we look at health information and what we know about diseases, this information doubles about every 80 days. So, you know, if we look at certain diseases like cancer, but other diseases as well, like infectious diseases, we know so much more. And at the same time, there are more technologies where we can better make decisions as well from digital technologies, but also from, you know, more technologies around diagnostics. And what that means is that actually going from a time where we were just diagnosing patients quite late and to see, you know, what can be done at that time, we're moving much, much earlier in the diagnosis. And the earlier you move in the diagnosis, the better it's treatable, but also the survival and the outcome for patients is significantly improved. And there are a number of great examples for that. Breast cancer is one of those examples where this used to be a death sentence a long time ago. Now, actually, the survival rates are extremely good. And the earlier we actually diagnose breast cancer, you know, the longer the survival. And can you imagine, you know, if you look at patients and oftentimes mothers who have young children, what they can do in that time? They can see their children graduate from high school. They can see the children marry. So there are a lot of life events that can now be really enabled. And so for these people, this is really an emotional thing.
And Duran, for rare disease, diagnosis has a particular significance, not just as a gateway to the right treatment, but also ending uncertainty.
Certainly. Thank you very much, Vivian, and hello, Thomas, to you. Definitely, sir, in the rare diseases space, and if you don't mind, I'll just start with my personal example. You know, I have two children, both born with rare conditions. My daughter was born with no diagnosis. She had 10, 12 months where it was really highly uncertain in terms of how much physical and actually cognitive development she would have. She was adopted. We couldn't do actually any kind of genetic genomic testing because she didn't have a parent that she could actually be compared to. And so we have always spent her entire life, you know, not actually knowing exactly what was going to come next. And it was always kind of making up as you go along. Luckily, we lived in a place that had a great healthcare system, so she had great care, but never actually got it, has never gotten an accurate diagnosis. My son was born also with a rare disorder. He was born with a heart condition. We knew from day one what the condition was. He always had a pathway in front of him. Every milestone, we would get him checked out. We would follow through until he was an adult. So it's all the difference in the world, as you say, in terms of the certainty. So getting a diagnosis is actually a key, even if there isn't necessarily something, you know, you could do about it right away.
And the other aspect of this, of course, Joanne, is that once you have a diagnosis, you can find other people like you. And that is also the nucleus for future research, having people with the same condition diagnosed properly so that you can then go on. I mean, you mentioned the technology there. There's an extraordinary digital transformation. How do you think the role of diagnostics and digitalization are playing out in this transformation of healthcare?
It's the most amazing transformation imaginable, because we are able to, I mean, when you talk about technology, obviously to be able to do a diagnosis, to get an accurate diagnosis, you know, much earlier, and to be able to reach out, not only are, you know, patients finding other patients, they're actually setting up patient registries. They're doing natural, you know, history studies, because they can surf and find people around the world that are like them. But beyond that, they're actually able to collect milestones around the diseases and set themselves up for getting a treatment. So patients are actually being quite active. And of course, being able to reach other people through the internet, through, you know, social media, has been a transformation as well. So absolutely. The other big thing that's happening is the sharing of this kind of diagnostic information. And that's something we're looking forward to, having global platforms where people can actually share their information and then be able to have an accumulation, not only of more people, but also share all that information with researchers in a very ready way, so that we can actually begin to get to that next step. And that is how we're going to treat these diseases.
Thomas, you've overseen a revolution in your time at Roche Diagnostics. I mean, you joined in 2003, as I said, and diagnostics, I mean, they're already the backbone of treatments, but it's actually the digitalization that's lending them kind of an extra layer of salience and impact.
Yeah, if you look at the digitalization, it's really transforming all kinds of, you know, industries in the world. It's not only healthcare that's really being transformed. I would even say that healthcare is actually an area that's lagging many other, you know, areas. But, you know, we can see it moving in that direction, and so it's already there. And you can see it in some areas, for example, you see apps and wearables that are already helping to predict and monitor and manage people's health. For example, with patients with chronic diseases such as diabetes, where it really helps them to take control of their disease and become part of the healthcare decision-making. And going even further, what's happening now is also that artificial intelligence is playing a much stronger role in that it really helps to read the slides and really understand, you know, what biomarkers and are expressed and what other markers show potential cancer, or also will help in the treatment decision. So, you know, these things are happening very, very rapidly, and even more rapidly, I would say, in the last 2 years. Now, this information on a much bigger scale, many more patients, really enables, on the one hand, better decisions in terms of R&D development, because you get to see, you know, maybe patients with very rare disease that you would otherwise not see in clinical trials. But it also helps you to really understand what is the best treatment decision, because you could look at, you know, similar patients, even if it's a small number, and how have they been treated? What was the biggest chance for success? So there are really opportunities in, you know, big data across many patients to be much better in on the one hand developing medicines, but on the other hand also making the right clinic decisions. And this is where also we believe that you know, artificial intelligence to enable better decision making will need to play a critical role, because no doctor is able to remember all of the new information that comes out every day. You know, people would have to read papers and scientific publications 24 hours a day to stay up to date. So really to use artificial intelligence to make good decisions is critical, knowing that the doctor will still make the final decision, but it's like a navigational system in the car, which kind of tells you which way to go. The doctor can still decide whether or not they want to go that direction, but it really enables better decision making, and that's critical to improve patient outcomes.
And I think another area that's so interesting about diagnostics at the moment is that there are some particular disease areas that have the potential to be completely transformed. I mean, Joanne, obviously, you know, we talked a lot about rare diseases, but where do you think rare diseases have the potential to be transformed by these new diagnostic tools?
Well, all of the, I mean, obviously the genetically based rare diseases, but can I respond a bit to what Thomas was saying also, you know, there, because it really strikes something to me. I mean, Thomas is talking about, you know, the information that's coming out of the bioinformatics, but we also see a huge transformation in terms of the patient information. And the other thing that's happening in this digital revolution is that the information is being made available to the patients. So the patients can actually be better informed. And quite frankly, I'm sure, you know, when you're talking about decision making, it is the patient in, you know, collaboration with the physician as to what the right decision is. So one of the things that's exciting for us in the rare diseases space is to actually be able to see how patients can actually become much more part of the decision making. But it's actually opening up all of these rare diseases.
Thomas, we've seen companion diagnostics, as they're called, in their use in oncology has been completely transformative. You know, companion diagnostics, I mean, just think of breast cancer, have allowed precision medicine to take place in oncology, and there is no going back. It's being extended further and further. What other disease areas do you see as being amenable to that kind of approach, the kind of approach that we've seen in oncology, thanks to diagnostics?
So this is obviously something which is very well known about in oncology, but there are also other areas where this is going to play a much bigger role in the future. I think areas like cardiology, but also in the area of neurodegenerative diseases, the better you understand the patient, the better you can treat the patient. And not only that, the earlier you can actually diagnose, the better is the outcome for this patient. And I think an area where this is already happening more and more today, but not enough in my view, is in cervical cancer. I mean, there's still more than 300,000 women every year that die of cervical cancer. And we know that 99% of all cervical cancers are caused by a virus called human papilloma virus, and infections of HPV, human papilloma virus, is something that's very, you know, happens very often. I mean, you look at people throughout their lives, most people have some HPV infection at some point in their life, but, you know, it's a persistence of this infection, and its specific subtypes, genotypes of this virus that really caused the cancer. And when you screen these women early, while they're still in a precancerous stage, cervical cancer is preventable and treatable. It can be managed very effectively. But if you don't do that, then, you know, you get to the fact that, you know, more than 300,000 women have to die. And I think this can be one of the areas that can really be transformed, because none of these women would have to die. So there is really a lot of potential in earlier diagnosis and more personalized diagnosis.
So diagnostics do have this extraordinary ability now, and you know, every day I find out about something else and I just marvel at it. But there's not enough access still across, well, even parts of the same country, let alone different countries in the world. Thomas, what are the challenges about access to diagnostics, which I know are not just related to their cost by any means?
Yeah, as you mentioned, universal access to quality healthcare and medical innovation is really still a big challenge. And we saw it during the COVID pandemic, where some healthcare systems were less prepared than others simply because they have not invested enough in their healthcare infrastructure in the last 10 to 20 years. So there are really major discrepancies. And you can see that by how much money they invest into healthcare. And also, when you look at diagnostics is still a very small part in the overall healthcare spend. And if you can really diagnose earlier, not only can you improve the outcomes of patients, but you can actually reduce the cost in the healthcare system. And so an investment is really not only good in terms of personal health, but also in terms of, you know, the burden on the overall healthcare costs of a country. So as a company, we're trying to address those challenges, and we are working with partnerships, through partnerships and other initiatives, like our Global Access Program, in getting more access to patients around the world, specifically in, you know, countries that have not enough, diagnostics. And we've done that, for example, in Africa, through providing more HIV testing, but we have expanded that into other areas like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, but also HPV testing, the human papilloma virus testing that I mentioned earlier. But it's clear that the private sector alone cannot solve these challenges. It's really important that healthcare is a priority for all those governments to invest in, and that they really invest in a proper infrastructure, but also in an earlier diagnosis. The other part is healthcare regulation. And healthcare regulation is very important because, you know, it's there to really protect the patient. But if you see the speed at which the innovation progresses, it's hard for the regulation to keep up. And what you see is that the different regulatory bodies in every country, they come up with own rules. So basically, every country has different requirements. So we really need to think about this more globally. I think it's important that the regulatory bodies around the world work together to come up with, you know, general requirements, what's needed, etc. And also that they think about how they can, you know, accelerate access to this innovation is really critical, because every day where access is not granted, you know, you have people dying. So it's really something that's really urgent.
Because, Duran, we were talking a bit earlier about how if you don't get a diagnosis, you can't get a treatment, or you can't get the right treatment. And that's really important for rare disease. But it's particularly important, I guess, at the moment, because we've got all these extraordinary advanced therapies coming up. But unless you have the diagnosis, you can't get access to those advanced therapies.
I think what COVID is also telling us, but we know certainly within rare disease and all other disease areas, the human side and the culture side, we are not a world that actually thinks about health as prevention. You know, we think about treating people once they're sick. So I think it's really looking at the human factor, is looking at how we actually change the culture of thinking about health as actually being able to, as Tom says, the technology is there for us to be able to do prevention, early detection, intervention early on before we actually have people that are not only going to be a cost to the system, but also going to be quite, you know, seriously impacted.
So I want to ask each of you from your own particular constituencies, if you like, how you're going to bring people along to the value of diagnostics.
Sadly, it's exactly what we're trying to do, only more so, right? It's getting people. We do a lot with bringing in patient profiles. Who are the people that are affected? What have been the transformations? How has it affected you? And also some of the other stories in which people have not been able to. I think it's also an overall culture change. Partly, as Thomas says, we have to invest in it. We have to provide the education.
Yeah, it is absolutely important that people understand the role of diagnostics really in preventing the disease. when you get a medicine, you know, you're already sick. But if you go and have an early diagnostics, you're still healthy, right? So you have to invest in your own health at a time when you're not feeling sick yet. But then it's the time point when you still can do something about it. You may not know yet that you're sick, but there's something wrong in your body. And you don't want to wait to the time point when you can't do anything about it anymore. So it's, first of all, the personal choice. Will you go for checkups, screenings, etc.? And oftentimes people don't. Yeah, even though that, you know, there are these possibilities. And the second part is that healthcare systems need to shift their investments into earlier diagnosis rather than just fighting, you know, for every month of a life at the end of a life, but really doing something about it when people are still healthy. We need to think about it more long term, and we need to do something about it when we're still healthy. I think those are key areas where if we do it right, we can really improve patient outcomes significantly. And at the same time, we can reduce costs to the healthcare system.
And Duran, do you think that we can focus policymakers' minds on the kind of, you know, policymaking changes that need to be made to really improve the patient journey by bringing in diagnostics at an earlier and a more appropriate stage?
If we can't do it now, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, if we can't get, you know, policymakers and healthcare systems to understand that this is a pivotal moment and that we can, in fact, do something about it. I think, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how and when we're going to be able to do it. I mean, on the other side of the course is we do have people that are already sick, that are trying to get diagnosed, children that are born with unexplained, you know, conditions. And the diagnostics there are going to be able to get their condition not only identified and identified accurately and rapidly, but also what we can talk about is in terms of secondary prevention before symptoms are developed. And I think those are the kind of excitements in which you've got that population that's going to be clamoring for it. How do we get access to those diagnostics? The exciting thing also, I think, is because we are seeing treatments on the other side of it. So I'm really, really hopeful that, you know, yes, we can use this as a pivotal moment and to really build on it from the patient, the public, all the way up to the highest level of decision making and investment.
I'm getting a real sense of excitement from both of you. And I just wanted, as we close our conversation, to ask you each to describe in just three words the feelings or the sentiments that most describe to you the future of diagnostics. Thomas, you first.
The first word would be accurate. Really, this is about the importance of the accuracy of the diagnosis in order to facilitate the right treatment. The second word would be early. It's really about the importance of early diagnosis so that on the one hand, patients have certainty, as was mentioned, about their you know, situation, but also it's about, you know, diagnosing at the stage where there is a high chance that the patient outcome will be very positive, right? And not waiting so late till, you know, a phase where you're just prolonging life and you actually cannot cure or save lives. And the third word would be personalized. And as we know much more about different diseases, we have new technologies, better technologies. We can really understand the disease for each individual to a much greater degree. And we can match with the right therapy so that the patient has the best possible outcome. So those would be my three words.
Joanne, how about your three?
One is transformational. I think we are recognizing that this is, in fact, transformational. We are absolutely, you know, moving into a different era in terms of being able to understand, you know, what causes the disease and what the possibilities are in terms of treating it. Second word I would give is empowerment, because this information is coming back to patients. They're empowered to be able to participate in making good decisions about what they want to do. Everything from, you know, pre-birth all the way through, you know, the life cycle. I guess the last word I would use is optimism. You know, we live, you know, when we live in the patient community, a lot of it is actually heartbreak. A lot of it's very depressing. And I think this is very optimistic for people, even under the most difficult circumstances, the ability to get that diagnosis and to know that there are possibly, you know, treatments that are going to be able to really, you know, be directed towards the exact cause. That's giving people a tremendous amount of optimism. So, you know, for me, it is. It's a very, you know, different time that we can look forward to.
That was a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much to both of you for taking part. Now, we'll be continuing this conversation on the importance of diagnostics in the coming weeks and months with the publication of patient testimonials, expert statements, and concrete examples on how diagnostics can lead to improved health outcomes. Just look out on Roche.com. Bye for now.
And that is the end of this episode. Thanks for tuning in. To find out more about Roche Diagnostics and Diagram Dialogues, please visit rochediagram.com. Stay tuned for the next episode.